That's right. Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to your second full day of TechEd here in Amsterdam. Hopefully you're having a great event and you're learning lots about Configuration Manager. My name is Wally Mead, and I'm one of the program managers in the product group, and I'll be co-presenting our session today with...
John Vinsel. I'm a program manager on the product group as well. So me and Wally will be here for the next 75 minutes, taking you through the journey that is Configuration Manager 2012 Deployment and Infrastructure Technical Overview. That being said, here's our session agenda. We're going to talk over the infrastructure simplification and the hierarchy design. We're going to talk about force discovery and the new boundary groups we introduced in Configuration Manager 2012. We're going to talk about the changes with SQL replication, other changes around client agent settings, a new feature called role-based administration, and then we're going to close it out with some what's coming new for Configuration Manager 2012 SP1. So as we've been going through the sessions here, you've seen our core three pillars. The first one about empowering users, just making people be more productive from almost anywhere on any device. The second pillar being unifying infrastructure, or really reducing your overall infrastructure costs. We're going to spend a lot of time on this pillar in this session today. And then just simplify administration, trying to make the IT pro's life a lot easier. Okay, so as we were doing Configuration Manager 2012, we had a lot of infrastructure promises that we built off of. First and foremost was just modernizing the architecture. For people who have been using the product for several years, like myself or Wally over there, you're used to how Configuration Manager was set up, how we'd replicate through file-based replication. We've actually gone and done some enhancements to move off file-based replication into things like SQL replication. We've also looked at how we can minimize the overall infrastructure that you're putting in your offices. Today you might have 100,000 clients and then have something like 300 plus servers to manage your infrastructure. We're looking at ways for you to really reduce that number and lower your total cost to using Deploy Configuration Manager. And we do this through things like the SQL replication and through the improvements to distribution points or branch cache. We've also worked on consolidating the infrastructure for primary sites. I mentioned a moment ago there's this feature role-based administration. That's something that today that you'd put a primary site in place for, but only for security. And we'll talk a little bit more about how the new feature will actually allow you to eliminate primary sites. We've introduced language neutral, so we work more like things like Office where we have language packs and less of language-based installations. And then we've also gone ahead and we've done our client agent settings based on collections. So instead of having client agent settings per site, we've done these things per collection, and we're going to dive a little bit more into that later in the session. So first and foremost, as you're setting up Configuration Manager 2012, you'll have to figure out a few things and make some decisions. You're going to have to figure out, when am I going to need a central administration site? When am I going to need a primary site? When am I going to need a secondary site? And when am I going to need a distribution point? Let me dive into each one of those. The central administration site. This is your high level. It's kind of compared to the central site that you'd have today, but it's a more flattened hierarchy. So this is really designed for the overall centralized reporting and administration, and it helps simplify management. It's the single point to go administer everything from, trying to make it easier to do everything in your hierarchy. When you're looking at a central administration site, there's a few reasons that you might deploy one of these. The first reason is, naturally, you're going to exceed 100,000 clients in your hierarchy. So you'll obviously need that so you can scale out across multiple primary sites. And we'll talk about the primary sites in a moment. Another reason is potentially for any kind of geographical network restrictions that you might have. You might actually have an enterprise that may be like 60,000, and 30,000 are in the United States, 30,000 are in the Netherlands, and there's not a highly connected link between the U.S. and the Netherlands for all your data to flow. So you can look at using a central administration site, do all the core management there, and have some primary sites to replicate out. And then any other time you might need a primary site is, like I said, those scale-out type things. Okay, so the primary sites. Primary sites work a lot like they do today, but the main reason that they're there is for client management. Clients will never report to that central administration site. That is really just the highest level only for management. So as we look at the diagram here, you can see that the primaries are directly reporting to the central site, but primaries also don't report to other primaries. So the primaries are there for scale out and for the clients to report to. There's a 100,000 client limitation or supportability statement for 100,000 clients on each primary site. So once you get beyond 100,000, then you'd want to go and deploy a second primary site. An additional advantage of having multiple primary sites is that we offer the ability to replicate the data across all of them. So we're going to talk a little bit later about global data and local data, but the data will replicate, everything will replicate up to the central site, and then the global data, which is the data that you use for administration, will replicate across, you know, the central sites and all the primaries, so allowing you to basically get some fault tolerance in your environment. And then another reason that you'd go and put a central site in place is for content regulation. So if we look at things in the past with Configuration Manager 2007 that you might have put a central site or a primary site in place was to decentralize administration. You are in France and you had an admin there and you guys wanted a strict security model, you might have put a primary site up to do that. You might have put up a primary site in Canada just to have a specific set of client agent settings. You don't need to do those types of things anymore. Additionally, you might have put things up for language or even content routing. We've actually made some changes in the way we can go and route content, so you don't specifically need to go and tier all these primaries just to do content routing. We've done some really cool thing with secondary sites to allow you to route the content and kind of collapse your infrastructure and flatten it out. So as we're looking at this, it's the central administration site at the top, and then the primaries is the second level on the bottom, all peer to each other. And then the secondary sites would attach to a primary site. Okay, the secondary sites, like I say, would attach to a primary site. These specifically are used when you need to manage the upward flow of traffic. So a true story is I was working with one of our customers early on at this, and we were looking at the new model, and we were like, hey, you know, I got this primary site. I got this new feature on the distribution point that allows me to throttle content that we'll talk about in a moment. And it's like, wow, I might not need the secondary site. They had roughly about 2 or 3,000 clients, but the link wasn't very strong. So they thought they had enough of the link to process all the data, but the messages going back and forth to the MP caused a huge backlog and actually kind of clogged up their network. So we took off the distribution point, installed a secondary site so it could actually buffer and manage the upward flow of traffic, and they were still able to, you know, effectively work and minimize the usage on the network. So when you kind of think about these secondary sites, it's really managing the flow of traffic up, so you know, your status messages, requests for policy, and it's less about managing the content down like you would in Configuration Manager 2007. And again, we're going to allow you to tier secondary sites. So if you have a deep network structure that you need to do any kind of content routing, so you might have had like a primary reporting to another primary reporting to a third primary, you could actually go and create a link between the two primaries to route traffic. Okay, distribution points. You look at these when things like bits aren't enough. So you're concerned about just the content coming down to the client. So you have enough bandwidth to send status messages up, you know, transfer all your policy back and forth, but maybe not enough to get your office installs. So you could have something like a remote office with 5,000 PCs, and you know, there might be a combination of XP and Windows 7, so maybe branch cache isn't available for you. And you want to make sure that all these devices aren't going over the WAN for the content. So that's a good instance of when you want to go put a distribution point in place. As we look for a distribution point, we added the new features of scheduling and throttling. These are really similar to what you'd see on a sender control in Configuration Manager 2007, where we have the schedule and the rate limits. So we can go ahead and we can actually schedule the time and how much traffic we want to go to this distribution point. So you don't actually need to go and put that secondary site in place just to monitor or just to control that content coming down. A couple other areas that you'd probably still need the distribution point is for Pixie. Generally, Pixie won't work over a WAN due to the Pixie request that you need to send. Multicast or anything really operating system deployment related. As you, you know, think operating system deployment, that's usually several gigs of data. And with the use of WinPE to do the deployments, branch cache isn't generally available for that type of item. So if you're doing mass rollouts of like, you know, Windows 7 or shortly when you go to Windows 8, you know, a distribution point might be useful in some areas that you have a lot of clients. And then additionally for AppV streaming, just having a server local to do all the streaming. Okay, so minimizing the infrastructure at remote offices. So again, I talked about, you know, the distribution point covers it. We actually consolidated the distribution point in Configuration Manager 2012. The branch DP is no longer. We allow you to go ahead and we allow you to put the distribution point on any client or any server. Any client Windows Vista SP2 or higher, or any server, Server 2003 SP2 or higher. So when you used to look at this matrix we had in Configuration Manager 2007 of, you know, a branch DP, a server share DP, you know, a secondary site with a DP on it, you know, just a regular DP, which one do I kind of use? We actually took all those and kind of collapsed it into one consolidated role that allows us to just simplify and make it easier for you guys to administer. You can use the multicast and the Pixie option only on the server class OSs. So even though we extended the distribution point to the client, we still do rely on a couple server technologies for some of the roles, but those are all rolled in. And like I mentioned, we added the throttling and the scheduling. So when you look at a remote distribution point in your hierarchy or in your console, you'll see those tabs similar to what you see on a sender today that allow you to go and set the schedule or set the throttling on those. And then lastly, we added a pre-stage content. So in the past, we had things like, you know, the branch DP had its own way to load content, and then we had that package preload on site tool. What we've actually done in Configuration Manager 2012 is we've gone ahead and we've built in a pre-stage content feature that allows you to go and actually create a file that you can mass distribute anywhere you need to and load it on either a distribution point, a secondary site, or a primary site, or even to your central administration site. So pre-staging content to make it just easier to, you know, use any kind of distribution points you have there. Distribution point groups. So we had the distribution point lists in Configuration Manager 2007 that were kind of easy in your first time setup, but if you're trying to continually manage your hierarchy or your infrastructure, we got the feedback that they weren't really useful. So we've gone ahead and we've reworked the distribution point group concept. So now we allow you to go and actually manage the content actually on a distribution point or a group level. You can go and add a member in, and we're going to automatically detect the content it needs and send that down to the distribution point. So it's really a dynamic distribution point group. Additionally, when you go and remove, we'll prompt you to remove the content. So when you're bringing a new distribution point up into your environment, you can have a distribution point group that says maybe all base software for clients. Add that distribution point to that group, and it'll get Office, it'll get all the security patches, maybe the drivers in the OS image, and then you don't have to worry about managing that content. And again, you're managing it at one level and not at the 35 distribution points that your infrastructure has. And then we also allow you to associate the distribution point groups with collections. So we're gonna actually have an app session, I believe it's tomorrow, and we'll talk about targeting. Well, as we're doing the targeting, we'll allow you to go and automatically deploy the content when you're deploying applications. What we allow you to do is we allow you to go and link the collections to distribution point groups. So you might have a group that says, you know, finance, or a collection that says finance, and you know that, you know, finance is located in the United States, so you have all USDPs. You can link those two things together, and then when you're doing a deployment, it'll automatically send the content. Likewise, you might just have a distribution point that says all distribution point groups. And then when you're sending out security updates or things like Adobe, when you're doing your targeting, you can make sure the content's available everywhere. So lots of optimizations in the content arena just to make your life easier and try to think a little less about the content that's going on. Okay, I think I jumped ahead a little bit. Content pre-staging again, you know, one feature for all server types. It does cover all package types in our product. So it works for OS images, it works for apps, it works for software updates. So there's no limitation there. We did make some changes on the distribution point. So if you guys got to play around a little bit with Configuration Manager 2012, you'll see we've actually restructured the distribution point and did what we call a single instance store. That single instance store is called the content library, so we store data all in that now. We do have a backwards compatibility mode for all the objects in 2007 called the package share, so if you still need the flat file structure, we have that. So our package our pre-staging tool actually goes and pre-populates all that, both of those shares. We also compress the file, so when we go and we create this file, we go out and we compress it. So that way when you're transferring it between sites, or if you want to put it on a DVD or hard drive, you're not taking the full size of the files. It's actually compressed pretty close to the compression we use for the site-to-site packages. And then on every distribution point, we go and copy this extract content file. So when you're thinking about pre-staging, pre-staging is always enabled for every distribution point. You just need to go and put a file, the pre-stage content file on the distribution point, and then go and use this extract content to extract it. We actually do all the detection we need to do on the distribution point. So we interactively, you know, have some metadata in the package and talk to the MP, and then we figure out, hey, you're trying to pre-stage a version that's older than the one I already have. It'll actually reject that and either fail or continue on. So a little bit of smartness in the pre-stage tool as well, so that you guys don't corrupt your DPs with old data or have to do a lot of cleanup after you're done with your pre-staging.
All right, thank you, John. So as John was talking about, he was talking about the hierarchy and when you need a central site, which is really when you have more than one primary site. And he's talking about the reasons for having primary sites, and it's really to manage your clients. Well, to manage clients, you really have to set up boundaries. Boundaries are the idea and the identifiers that tell us which clients are being managed by which site. So you guys in 2007, you've gone through and created boundaries. You created IP addresses, IP address ranges, IP subnets, AD sites, and IPv6 prefixes as your boundaries. And we have all those same type of boundaries inside ConfigMan 2012, as we'll talk about, I think it's on the next slide. But what we've added in ConfigMan 2012 is a new discovery method called Active Directory Forest Discovery. And this can help you automate that creation of your boundaries. So today, it's not uncommon for you to go in there and mistype your IP subnet. And so you typed in the wrong IP subnet into Configuration Manager, and all of a sudden when you do Active Directory System Discovery, your clients aren't assigned to your site, so they don't get automatically pushed as you want or expecting them to be. And that's because the admin mistyped this, or they mistyped the AD site, something like that. So with this new Active Directory Forest Discovery method, we can go out there and automate this process of creating these boundaries for you for your IP subnets, which we actually convert into IP address ranges, as well as your Active Directory sites. So what this discovery method will do for you, it'll go out there and discover the forest that the site server is a member of. So when you install your site server in a forest, we'll go out and discover that forest automatically, and then any trusted forest of the site server's forest. But what you can also do is, today you guys have scenarios where you have your site server in a forest, and you have remote forests of clients, and you're trying to manage those untrusted forests where you have clients. And it's kind of hard to do. You have to have a WINS infrastructure, you have to have DNS set up properly, you have to have a server locator point implemented so clients can find those resources they want in your management point, distribution point, and so on. So it's a little bit harder to do. Well, now the Active Directory Forest Discovery process, with this forest discovery, you can tell us to discover a remote forest. So you can directly say, go out there and find this forest of where my clients are, and you can also have the site server publish its information into that Active Directory forest. In your current scenario, your clients are in Forest B, your site's in Forest A, the site publishes in Forest A. Your clients, when they boot up, they try and query for site information in Forest B, and they find nothing because we don't publish in that remote forest. So that's where you have to have the WINS and the SLP. Now you can have our site server publish its site information into Forest B where your clients are, so that clients can still pull their local global catalog, find the configuration manager site information they need directly from Active Directory. No more WINS requirements, no more server locator point requirements. In fact, we've removed the server locator point site system role from the environment because you don't really need that anymore. So that's a couple of the benefits of this new discovery method that we have. So the process flow here for you is we have a forest, contoso.com, with a domain, engineering.contoso.com. You go ahead and do your Active Directory Forest discovery process, and I'll demonstrate this for you momentarily. It's going to go ahead and discover the domains you have. It's going to discover all the subnets that are associated with those domains in the forest, and what Active Directory sites you have associated with those domains and in your forest. Then you can go ahead and convert those into boundaries. So we can go ahead and create boundaries out of those IP subnets as well as the AD sites. You can have automatic boundary creation if you wish, or you can just have it discover the IP subnets and discover the AD sites, then you individually pick and choose which ones you want to use as boundaries. They're going to be boundaries, but to be able to be utilized as boundaries, which really gets into the point of boundary groups. And that's that last column on the bottom site where it says boundary group and the boundary group purpose. So in Configuration Manager 2007, whenever you create a boundary, it's being used by Configuration Manager for site assignment and content lookup and so on. In 2012, your boundaries do nothing for you automatically. So by default, just by discovering 10,000 subnets or 80 sites, All it's going to do is chew up disk space in your database. They're not being utilized until you add them to a boundary group. So a boundary group is a logical grouping of boundaries that you want to use for a specific purpose. And you see that last column where it says site assignment or content or both of them on the Hawaii boundary. You designate in a boundary group that clients within these boundaries, and you can have multiple boundaries in a single boundary group, are going to be used for assignment to my site. So I do AD system discovery. The clients are within my subnet or AD site. I want to assign them to my site for automatic client push, as well as software update client install. Or I want to use them for content lookup to be able to find these distribution points throughout my infrastructure that John was just talking about. Or you can see again in the Hawaii, they're used for both purposes. The same boundaries are used for site assignment as well as for content lookup. The cool thing is that you can have different boundary groups for different purposes. And you can see the top one and the bottom three are for two different purposes. We do not support overlapping boundaries in Configuration Manager 2007. Because then you get into the scenario where John's client might boot up and see two different boundaries, two different sites in Active Directory and not pick the right one to assign to or pick the wrong MP to be utilizing, assuming it's in a roaming scenario. We don't support boundary groups for overlapping for site assignment in Configuration Manager 2012 either. However, we do support overlapping boundaries in boundary groups for content lookup. Because you just want to make sure that your client, when it gets this patch or wants to get this app, it can find that content. And you don't necessarily care if it has to go to a different boundary to find that. You may care, so you may want to do protection there, but you may also want to say, hey, I can use any distribution point. So we do support overlapping boundaries for content lookup, but not for site assignment. So that's the purpose of having the boundary groups. You can have a very restricted one for site assignment and a very expansive one or overlapping one for your content lookup to make sure your clients get the content that they need. So the boundaries, as I already mentioned, we had the same type that we had in ConfigMan 2007, so the same four type of boundaries are still there. They can be automatically created by this AD Force discovery process that I'll show you here momentarily. We talked about the separation of duties of those boundaries in boundary groups for content or site assignment. You then go ahead and create your boundary groups, including the boundaries that you want, for either of those purposes. And so use the logical grouping of those boundaries for the specific purpose you want, for the appropriate sites that you want. The important thing to remember that boundaries and boundary groups are both global data that we'll talk about later on, so they can get replicated everywhere. So let's go ahead and kick over and show you a quick little demo of that. So here's my central administration site. I actually have a hierarchy here, so it's a central administration site. And you can see that I'm looking at the CAS, so I'm looking at the numerous different discovery methods that are available in my hierarchy. And you can see I have two sites here. CAS is my central administration site, and PR1 is a child primary site. And you can see that we have only one discovery method available at the CAS, and that is Active Directory Forest Discovery. That's only available at a CAS. It's also available at all primary sites. So I see it right above it, the box for primary one. It's disabled. I'm running it at the CAS. So it is enabled there. So all you have to do to enable is you go to the properties of that discovery method. You click the checkbox to enable Active Directory Forest Discovery. And then if you want to, you can individually select those bottom two checkboxes. Automatically create boundaries out of AD sites. Automatically create boundaries out of IP subnets. And then how often you want to rerun your Active Directory Forest Discovery to see if there's been any changes, new domains added, new subnets added, new IP, AD sites added. So you just enable that. We run. Once we run, it runs fairly quickly in most cases, depending unless you're really large, our results get published into the Active Directory Force node in the console. So here you can see that I discovered one domain, Forest Configuration Manager dom.local. And then down below it tells me the specific information that I found there. I want to get more details. Down at the bottom there are some tabs. I click the domains tab. You can see I discovered one domain. So I only have one domain in the forest. My discovery status, I can see that I successfully discovered my information. And more importantly for you is publishing status. You can see that I'm publishing these two sites' information into this Active Directory Forest. So if I wanted to add a new forest, I could go here to Add Active Directory Forest, click Add, and type in Client B, specify to do discovery. My site server computer account may not be a valid account to do discovery. in that remote forest, because I may be in an untrusted forest scenario, so I can designate an account that would have rights to discover in that remote forest. I can do that. And then I can also go to the publishing tab, and I can designate the sites that I want to publish into the Active Directory forest for my clients. So publish my primary site. There's no need for them to find out about the cows, because they can't be managed by cows. So publish my site's information there. That obviously means that the Active Directory forest in client B has to be extended with the Configuration Manager Active Directory schema. Now, we haven't mentioned it, but the schema is exactly the same in Configuration Manager 2012 as it was in 2007. So you don't have to re-extend your hierarchy information, the schema. You would have to extend into remote forest that you want to publish to. Okay, so you go ahead and add whatever forest you want to do discovery on. Once you do your discovery, what happens? Well, once I find my discovered information, I can go to the ribbon. I can say show 80 sites. And that shows me the Active Directory sites that were discovered in this environment. And I just have two. One of my TAP customers ran this, and they found 43 Active Directory sites when they ran 80 forest discovery. So that's not too bad. But we then went and we ran 80 forest discovery, and we said show IP subnets. And I only have one IP subnet in my environment. This one TAP customer, they had 56,384 IP subnets in Active Directory. And they had no idea that they had that many. In fact, this was back in beta 1, and we couldn't even display all 56,000 of them then. So we had issues. But the nice thing is, even though we discovered all those, we didn't use them. And we don't use them until you put them in a boundary group. So that's the next thing you would do, is here's the boundaries that we created. Remember, I had it turned on to automatically create boundaries. So we created boundaries. My IP address range got created out of my 80, or out of my IP subnet. So we automatically convert your IP subnets, in my case 192.168.3.0/24, and we convert that into the appropriate IP address range for you. Because we've always had problems in the past with those slash octets that weren't full 8, 16, or 24 bit. So we do that for you automatically and created the 280 sites. So in my TAP customer, we could have created boundaries out of those 56,000 subnets. Again, no big deal, because we don't use them until you add them to a boundary group. So then you create your boundary group. In this case, I have one group. It says one member of the is the number of boundaries, and site systems are the number of distribution points or state migration points that are available for content lookup. So if I want to see that, I go ahead and go to the boundaries or and go to boundary group, go to properties. Here's my one boundary. If I want to add another one, I just click add, and then it shows me my other boundaries that are available. Oops, sorry about that. I have the other two boundaries that have not added to a boundary group yet, so I see those. Now I want to define what the purpose of this boundary utilizing this boundary group is. That's the references tab. So I go here, and now I have two options. The top option is use this boundary group for site assignment. In other words, any clients, when they're discovered, if they're identified as a member of the Config Manager Site 80 site, are automatically assigned to the site PR1. Then you can also alternately configure content lookup. In this case, I have content lookup for two distribution points. So these are the distribution points that are available to these clients that are in these boundaries as part of this boundary group. So I could have one boundary group just for content lookup, different boundary group for site assignment, or in this case, one boundary group that does both. So this is where your boundaries are used. They're not utilized, so you add them into a boundary group. And you create as many boundary groups as you need to for your appropriate environment to manage those clients in these various different primary sites that John was talking about, for scale out, for content regulations, for local point of contact, and so on. The important thing to note, and we'll talk about this in the next coming slides, is that this is global data. It replicates to all your primary sites, as well as your central administration site. So you want to make sure the names you define here, like this says primary site one clients, are unique and they make sense. Don't just say local clients. Because if I have local clients, it gets replicated over another site. It'll say local clients there, but it'll be the same boundaries I'd put in my original boundary group. All right. So that should give you some good clues as to that status. The next thing we have, and we just mentioned this, is the SQL replication, and John introduced it earlier. You guys are all familiar with ConfigMan 2007, and how many of you have hierarchies in ConfigMan 2007? More than one primary site or primaries and secondaries? A good number of you. So you guys are all familiar with the sender, and John mentioned the sender controls that we have. And you guys are all familiar with them and how you replicate data between sites in Configuration Manager 2007. It's all based off of senders and the transfer of files between sites. Well, that's kind of problematic. So when you guys have your environment set up and you have a problem, information is not flowing up to the central site or not flowing down to your primary sites or secondary sites. You got to go dig into log files and look at inboxes to see where that backlog is. Why is my data not transferring across? So to help alleviate that, and when John was talking about the infrastructure promises to make things better for you, we're moving off of the file-based replication to more of the database-based replication, which is much more precise and accurate, as well as more efficient than it is in that file-based replication. So we have our own replication technology. We call it the DRS, the Data Replication Service. It's built by the Configuration Manager product team. It relies on SQL Server technology, but we're not using SQL replication itself. So we're using SQL Server Service Broker and SQL Change Tracking to find rows in tables that have been modified, and then using the Service Broker to go ahead and get those moved over to the upper level site or the down level site appropriately where you are. Data is encrypted as it is brought across through the SQL replication. We have both one direction and bidirectional. And I'll show you this in the upcoming slide showing the different directions of the different types of replication we do. The replication runs under the SMS Executive service. So the SMS Executive has the components that we use for our data replication service, the configuration manager components that monitor and manage the DRS components. Oops. So we have three different types of data that we replicate throughout our environment. The top two are based on the SQL Server-based replication through DRS. The bottom one is what you guys know today. With that file-based replication, the same thing you have today with the component, with the replication manager and the scheduler and the sender and the despooler and replication manager on the other end. Same type of stuff, but it's really there for content. So when John was talking about creating an OS image file or an application or a software update or a package, that's moved between sites through the file-based replication technology, just what you guys have today. But all of your client data, all of your administrative actions, all those objects you create outside of content get moved between sites through SQL-based replication. The advantage of that is not just the technology, but the data is processed one time. So when John's clients report into his primary site, we process their hardware inventory, their heartbeat discovery, their status messages, software metering, whatever type of data is. We process it in the local primary site. We then use SQL replication to replicate that up to the CAS. No data processing at all at the CAS. It's dumped directly into SQL Server. So the CAS, in this case, is doing very, very little SQL work. All the SQL heavy lifting is done at the primary sites. So it's much more efficient on your infrastructure. So if you've looked at our supported configurations guide and looked at the sizing guides for our site servers, you generally see that the CAS is much lower processing as far as requirements for memory and CPU and so on than we have for primary sites, because there's where all the SQL work is being done. Anyway, so we have global data, which means it replicates everywhere. If I'm you guys at the central sites today, you create a collection or a package or an advertisement that replicates down to your primary sites. If you're at a primary site, you create a collection, a package, advertisement. That doesn't replicate up to your central site, and the other primary site doesn't know about it. In 2012, that will be replicated everywhere. So no matter where you are, any object you create in the admin console replicates to all your other sites with administrator consoles. So one of John's points there was you don't have to have multiple primary sites now for decentralized administration, because it happens everywhere. Anything you create goes everywhere. Now you can use the role-based administration, as John will talk about later on, to control who can see what gets replicated everywhere, but it does go everywhere. Then we have site data. Site data is the data generated at a primary site, primarily client data, hardware inventory, software inventory, status, state messages, compliance information, status messages, and so on. That gets sent from clients to the primary site, processed there at the primary site, and then today we replicate that up to the central administration site. But that's the one direction. It goes from primary to central site. It never goes anywhere else. And then we have the content-based replication. So let's dig more into the SQL-based replication for you. So this is showing you, it's got to look at the color coding here to really figure out what's going on. So the global data is the orangish or reddish color arrows, and that's the data that replicates everywhere. So if you can see, you have a primary site, you have two primary sites and a central administration site, and you see those red or orange arrows going both directions. So if I'm at primary site on the left-hand side, I create a collection that replicates up to the CAS and then down to my other primary site. If I'm at primary side of the right-hand side, I create a package or an application that replicates up to the CAS and then down to my other primary site. Global data, it goes everywhere. You see a red arrow going down to your secondary site as well. We do have global data that replicates down to a secondary site, but it actually is a subset of data that goes down to secondary site. It's not a full replication. So what this tells you is that secondary sites now have SQL Server requirements because they have a SQL database because we're doing global replication down. Now, there actually shouldn't be a red arrow going back up from a secondary site because we don't replicate global data up to from a secondary site to a primary site through SQL replication. We actually use file replication for anything there. So it's file-based replication from a secondary site up to a primary site. Now, site data is that greenish arrow, and that's your client data. So clients reporting in their information, and then the site primary site server replicating that up to the central site. But you notice that both those, it's one direction. It's from the primary site up to the CAS. It doesn't replicate down to any other primary site. So even though the package you create at primary site one gets replicated, the metadata over to primary site two through the CAS, primary site one client data never appears on primary site two. So you don't have to worry about other sites seeing your client data. They're just going to see your administrative objects that you create. Now, your central administration site, by nature, gets everything. So you have consolidated reporting of all your client data up at the central administration site. And then the yellow lines or yellow arrows are your content. So once you've created a package, whether it's an image, whether it's a software update, an application, or a normal package, that content moves between site servers through file-based replication, the same replication you've been using for years. And that's also from site server out to the distribution point itself. So hopefully that helps clarify a little bit more on the different type of replication. Now, this is, I'm going to go through really quickly these couple of slides for you because it's not something you really have to be too concerned about. The biggest thing to know is that when you install a hierarchy, you want to make sure that all this replication stuff happens and is completed before you really utilize your primary sites you're installing. So we have two different replication maintenance modes, as we call them. There's site maintenance mode, which is when you're installing a brand new primary or secondary site. The site is unusable until replication has completed. There's also replication maintenance mode, which is part of your replication is working, like global data replication is working, but site data replication hasn't completed yet. So your CAS can work and do stuff, but your primary sites, you can do global stuff, but your site data has not been replicated up. All the status stuff created at a primary site. So if you're in site maintenance mode, that's the lower, that implies you're also in replication maintenance mode. So the big key takeaway here is that CAS by itself, you really don't want to have a CAS by itself because it doesn't do anything, you can't manage any clients. But that's the bottom bullet. There's no replication happening, so you won't see anything going on. But when you install your CAS, because now you're going to install primaries, when you're attaching a primary, you're in replication maintenance mode. You can do stuff at your CAS, but you want to be somewhat careful just so you don't lose data. I don't do anything in my environment until I know my replication links are up and running, and I'll show you that coming up here shortly. On primary sites, when you install a brand new primary site and attach it to your CAS, you're in site maintenance mode, and that primary site is completely unusable until you've got global data replication completed. Once that happens, if you load your admin console in the primary site, it'll say, hey, I'm in read-only mode because I'm still finishing up replication until we got replication completed. So the big thing here is really just to install your sites, wait till your links are active, that I'll show you here momentarily, and then go ahead and start doing your administration in your sites. And secondary site, when it's being installed, is also in site maintenance mode. Okay, so we're talking about this replication stuff. And you guys all know the log files to look at for ConfigMan 2007 and replication. Again, REPL manager and scheduler and sender and despool log and replication manager on the other end. So you know those log files. We're hoping you guys never have to look at a log file at all in Configuration Manager 2012. It's more of a troubleshooting thing with product support. But we're hoping you can use the admin console, what we mean here by the UI, the admin console, and the in-console monitoring as the first and main place you go to for any kind of status, including some troubleshooting information. We do have status messages for RCM as replication and control monitoring, replication configuration monitoring component, and also HMAN as hierarchy manager. So there are status messages we still have and we still maintain. There is one log file, RCM for replication configuration monitoring control log. But again, generally you're not going to have to look at that unless you're on the phone with customer support saying, hey, I got a problem. We do have a, for troubleshooting, we've created a stored procedure for you called SPDiagDRS that dumps out a ton of information for you on your replication links, your configuration of sites, what type of sites you have, primary versus secondary versus CAS, and where the link status is up and down, what replication groups you have, how they're being replicated, and so on. But again, that's more of a troubleshooting thing, as well as the VLOGs for BCP and SQL errors. Because we use BCP to bulk copy our information as we're establishing the replication links. But where we really want you guys to be is the top bullet, the admin console, and then the very bottom bullet, the replication link analyzer. So in the admin console, what you want to look for are, and I'll show you this momentarily in the console when we go to the demo, are my site links active? So in the replication between my sites, you're going to go look and see if those links are active. And if so, we'll tell you the last time we checked and things were active or degraded or link failed. And you want to check the status for those. So you want to check your link status in the active or in the console, and there's additional information I'll show you here that you can gain access to in the console. If necessary, then you go to status messages for RCM, or you go to the RCM control log file. But really, if you see the link's not active in the console, we want you going down to the bottom bullet, which is the replication link analyzer. The replication link analyzer is actually a tool we created that's added into our admin console as a link. You can also run it manually if you wish to. But it analyzes your SQL replication link between your two sites. And it will let you know if there's problems in those links, which obviously you must have because it said link is degraded or link has failed. And then it will tell you what the problem is. And in a lot of cases, it can remediate that issue. So it can fix the problem and let your link become active again. So it's a very, very cool tool. It's built on the Windows 7 network troubleshooting tool. So if you ever had to use that tool, it kind of does the same type of diagnostics and the same type of format and look and feel for you. It also will dump out a couple of log files. It will dump out a log file for you. So in the event that it can't remediate the problem, you get a log file that I can give to John, who's my SQL DBA, and he can go look at that log file and see what the issue is. We create one in a normal configuration manager log type format. We also create one in an XML file format for you. And we dump those to the desktop of the computer running the replication link analyzer. And I'm going to go ahead and show you that now so you can get some experience. Okay, so first thing you do, you got a hierarchy, so you're going to go to the monitoring node. And in the monitoring node, I want to go up to my site hierarchy. So the site hierarchy, this is a visual representation of what your hierarchy looks like. And this completely negates what John was talking about, why you would have a CAS. You don't have a CAS if you only have one primary site. That makes no sense at all. The only reason for having a CAS, we have multiple primary sites. And this environment I don't have. But let's just say I'm in a scenario where I'm going to be adding multiple primary sites. And PR1, let's say it's my primary site in Seattle. And I'm going to be adding a primary site over here in Amsterdam. So I need to have a CAS, going to have multiple primary sites. But I just installed my primary site after I've installed my CAS. And now I go look at my link here. And I can see I got this great big red here. That's not good. And I hover over that link and it tells me the link status. It says my link has failed. So that's not a good thing. You want that to be green saying link is active. But this is one way you get a visual representation of your hierarchy, and then you can quickly hover over your site, and it will tell you any alert status you have on your site and how many child sites you have. You can look at that real quick, as well as your link status here. You can also, and I don't have this hooked up now, but you could also go into a geographical view. Geographical view uses big maps, and you can tell us where your different sites are, and then we can draw a world map for you so you can see the link over the world map. So you can click on the link there as well and see some information about your link. Now, you know, I'm not hooked up with big maps here. I'm not on the internet, so I get an error. But you guys will be on consoles in a real environment, so you can go ahead and configure your links there. All you do is just go to configure view settings and then go into your site location, and you designate the location where those sites are. Then we'll pick them up on big maps next time you load. Okay, so I'll just go back to the hierarchy diagram. But I got a link failed here. That's the first place I would go. Now, if I want to find out what's wrong, I would go to database replication node. And that'll give me more detailed information about this link. And you can see it says link failed. And I can go down here and it says global status, so global data, link failed both directions. And the last time we checked or when we noticed that link was down. And then site data, the upload of site information is also failed. So I got problems. But you can also go down here at the very bottom. You have tabs. There's a parent site tab. And on the parent site tab, it just shows you more information about the SQL Server configuration of the parent site. So you can find the ports that are being used, the database location, database names, and so on. So we give you a lot of cool information there for your parent site, as well for your child site. Same type of information. Now, I want to figure out what's wrong with this link, so I can go ahead and select the link. And if I was a SQL person, I could go ahead and click the old save diagnostic files. It'll save these off as SQL files that I can give to John, my SQL DBA, and let him go do some investigation for me. I'm not. I don't know anything about SQL Server. I can barely spell it, let alone do anything with it. I'm going to go ahead and run the replication link analyzer. So I click run RLA. It's going to go out there, and I'm not sure what the RTM version have. It's somewhere between 14 and 20 different tests it runs on different types of common scenarios, things that can cause problems with a replication link issue. And so that will go ahead and run. You can run this as a command line utility as well. In this case, it detected that the SMS executive was not being, was not active on my child primary site. And we can go verify that real quickly. Go over to primary one, and you can see that the SMS executive here is in a not started state. And that's obviously required because the replication components in one slide said we're run out of SMS executive. So go back over here to my CAS, and I'm going to say restart the SMS executive. So I can have the RLA tool fix it for me. And it says, hey, I restarted the SMS executive. I'll go ahead and continue on. It's going to check more things. In this case, I think it's probably going to come back with a database consistency error. And that's just saying, hey, my link has failed because it's been down for a period of time. So as of right now, the link's in a failed state. So I know that's not going to be okay, so I can just go ahead and skip this rule and go on. Here it tells me my two log files it created. There's a XML file as well as a log file it puts in the root or on the desktop for you. So I can go and grab those log files if I need to. But I know that my issue was the SMS executive not running. So what happens is it went ahead and restarted the SMS executive. So go back over to primary one, and now I do a refresh. And now the SMS executive service is back restarted, so it resolved that for me automatically. And now what will happen is in a number of minutes, this will change to link is active. We give it a period of time to go ahead and reestablish the link, get all the data replicating back and forth that it needs to do, because we keep a backlog of data there up to 5 days worth. So it's going to replicate all the data across, and it'll go ahead and check it. And within 10 minutes or so, this will come back and say link is active. So it will go ahead and update that automatically for me. And then I'll be able to go back to the summary tab, and it will tell me the last date and time when any of these became active. So that's how we can go ahead and validate that that scenario. So we'll see that. So when we come back to another demo, we'll leave it sitting right here. So then we'll do a refresh. And then by then, it'll come back and say its link is active state. Oops. And you may get a console crash. That didn't happen. You guys didn't see that. But while you were there, you did see here's the two log files I put in the root of drive C. Or not the root drive C, on the desktop. Here's the XML file. So it gives me all the information, all the different tests that it ran in the replication link analyzer. And it tells it to remediate the SMS executive server startup. So it gives us all the information there. You can keep that for later viewing purposes. So let's go back over here, and we'll go back here. And so now we'll go, oh, we're back to active already. So it did go ahead and fix the link, and it's already recovered that state. And so now we're back to an active state. So now if I go back to my site hierarchy node, now I no longer have that big red X in the middle. And if I hover over the middle, and it's kind of sensitive here, there you go, link is active. And that's what you want to see. Obviously, you want to see more primary sites and secondary sites as well. But, oops, oh, yeah, there we go. Oh, it's still me. Okay. Alrighty. So when John was talking about the reasons for multiple primary sites, one of the things that you guys do today in ConfigMan 2007 is you want to have different settings, client agent settings for different sites. So John managed the servers in our environment, and he wants to do hardware inventory on a monthly basis because his server hardware doesn't change very much. I manage the desktops. I need to do inventory on a weekly basis at the longest because my client hardware is always changing. I'm getting new systems. I'm increasing memory, losing disk space, whatever it is. So I want to do hardware inventory more frequently than John does. Well, in ConfigMan 2007, those settings are site-wide settings. All clients in that site are going to get the same settings. So we might want to go ahead and have John with his own primary site for his servers. So we have hardware inventory set for monthly basis. Me, my own primary site for desktops. So I can do hardware inventory on a daily, weekly basis. That wastes a lot of money for you guys for server hardware, for operating system licenses, for configuration manager licenses, for SQL Server licenses, when you really don't need it. So what we've done in ConfigMan 2012 is we've taken your all your agents, those client agents you have, and we've made them hierarchy-wide based, which means all clients by default in your hierarchy are configured the exact same way for agents. but now giving you the flexibility that for John's servers, he's got 300 servers he mentioned earlier, I've got 60,000 desktops. Well, we're going to set the hardware inventory to be weekly or daily, whatever I want for my desktops, because that's the predominant number of clients. And then for John's server computers, we'll create a custom client setting with hardware inventory set to a monthly basis. We'll assign it to a collection of his servers. So his custom client settings will override the default client settings. That gives you the flexibility of customizing your agents on a per collection basis instead of having to go with a site-wide basis like you do today in Configuration Manager 2007. So it's the easiest way for you to reduce the number of primary sites you have is by going to collection-based client settings as opposed to having site-based client settings. And then John will show you the role-based administration here coming shortly, which is another great way of helping to reduce your infrastructure. If a client is in multiple different collections with multiple different policies set to a client settings, the policy spy tool in the Configuration Manager 2012 toolkit will show you what the resultant set of policies is. So what setting is actually being implemented on the client for hardware inventory if I'm in collections with different settings for hardware inventory. So in 2007, your settings are site-based. So all clients in that site get the exact same settings. You'd have to have multiple sites. Or we all know you could use the SDK and create a custom local policy and apply that, but most people didn't, so they created a separate site. In 2012, by default, your client settings are global. Everybody's set the exact same way. And then you create custom settings that are targeted to collections to help you to control the implementation of client settings on a collection basis, all within the same site. Remembering that these are global data that replicates everywhere. So everybody has the same information going up and down. One of the cool things we've done also within this client settings that I'll demonstrate for you here today is the SMS DefMoff, or configuring hardware inventory. How many of you like using Notepad to edit your SMS DefMoff file today? Half dozen hands. Not many of us like to do that. Now we no longer have an SMS DefMoff file. The file's gone away in Configuration Manager 2012. The file is represented in this user interface that I'll show you momentarily. So all you do is pick and choose which classes and attributes you want inside this UI, including adding new classes, removing, importing old MoF files that you want as well, and then saving that out as database information that gets pushed down to clients through policy. So no more physical files you have to go modify, you modify in a user interface. So it makes it a lot more convenient for you. So here's how it works. You use client settings to control your inventory. You configure for your defaults for everybody what you want everybody to report. So John wants to have these same settings that I want to have, so we configure these four classes as our default hardware inventory classes. However, John on his servers wants different settings, custom settings that I don't care about on the desktop side. So he's going to create a custom client setting that includes these two custom classes for hardware inventory for him. I have different things I want for my laptops. So I'll create a custom setting for my laptop clients that includes battery and PCM CIA controller. So the defaults will be in the default client settings that everybody gets. Then John creates custom for his settings that adds on top of the default, and I create custom settings for my collection that adds on to my environment. So let's go ahead and show you how that works. So let's go over to the administration workspace, and here's client settings. And I have two of them in here, but the only one that comes by default is the one labeled as default. So default client settings. You can see it has a priority of 10,000. That means it's the base one. It's the bottom one that gets implemented first. And then everything else with a higher number or lower number, depends on how you want to look at it. Anything that's a lower number than 10,000 is a higher priority, so it takes precedence over the default settings. So my default settings, if I go in here, here's where you see all those client agents that you have today. So today you guys would all have individual endpoint protection client agent, hardware inventory client agent, software inventory client agent, software metering client agent, and so on. Now we put them all in one user interface that you monitor and manage. You go in there, configure, yes, I do want to turn on endpoint protection, and here's how I want it to operate. Yes, I do want to have power management turned on, and here's the configuration for it. So I do this all in one user interface, which sets these globally for my entire infrastructure. Now, for hardware inventory, here's where I go in there and set my schedule, 7 days, which is what I want for my desktops. And I'll say set classes, and here's my SMS DefMoff file. So if I go scour the hard drive, there's no SMS DefMoff file anymore. It's sitting right here in this definition. If I want to go ahead and turn on BitLocker, I go ahead and expand BitLocker and pick whatever attributes I want. That's all the harder it is, and now I got BitLocker enabled. Well, if I want to go ahead and we're going to use some new conferencing system that requires webcams, I want to go find that, I can go up here and do a search. Oops. Do a cam, and there's my mobile device camera. I go ahead and enable that. And now I've got that turned on. If I want to go ahead and modify this, outside of just picking and choosing what we have here in the vault, I can go to Add. I can go ahead and here browse to a WMI namespace. And I'll just take the root SIMV2, and there's the different classes are available in this namespace. And if I want one of those, I go ahead and take the Win32 SID. And bingo, that goes ahead and adds it into our definition as well. You guys all have your SMS DefMoth files in your 2007 environment that you've modified heavily. You can go in here and do an import. And you go ahead and import your SMS 2007, or ConfigMan 2007 SMS DefMoth file in here to add those customizations to our definition. So it's very cool that you can go ahead and modify this very easily. So we've got our custom one, our default ones. Now John wants separate settings for his data center servers. So we'll go in here and look at the properties. So John goes in here and adds what he wants. He wants power management. We don't support power management on servers, so let's turn it off. He wants remote tools enabled, but he doesn't want a prompt for remote tools or for permission required. So when he takes remote control of one of his servers in his data center, he doesn't want to have to say, yes, you can do remote control, because there's nobody logged on there. And if John wants to have hardware inventory in there, he can go ahead and take hardware inventory. And now he can set the schedule for every month. And I guess I got to do 30 days, don't I? Or schedule it for, I'll type it. Oops, I'll type it on the other part of the keyboard. There we go. And now, I've modified that. All I have to do now is deploy this to my collection. And you can see it's already deployed to John's server systems collection. So this has a higher priority, so this setting is going to take precedent over my default setting that I've set for everybody else. You can have as many different custom settings that you want deployed to as many different collections as you want to. And again, clients will go by the priority order for implementation. So that gives you the flexibility of controlling and customizing and uniqueness between your different types of clients, servers versus desktops or different locations, without having to have different primary sites. With that, I think it's back over to John. Yes, it's back over to John to take you further along.
Nice job, Wally. Okay, so now we're going to talk about the cool feature of role-based administration. I like this feature an awful lot because I used to have to go and manage all these intricate security accounts, and I think this has made an IT pro's life a lot easier. So role-based administration allows us to map organizational roles to security roles. Out of the box, we ship you somewhat like 14 roles out of the box. So we've done things like an application admin, an OSD admin, a full administrator, things that, you know, we think are general use roles for you. It allows you to do the hierarchy security management from a single console. So again, we don't want you to go and say, you know, I'm managing servers here. I need to go stand up a second primary for servers just so I can put that level of control there. We should be able to use clients, servers, workstations, kiosks, you know, manufacturing machines should all be able to report through the same hierarchy, through the same primaries. And we should be able to use role-based administration to, you know, secure the different objects and the things that we want to interact with them. So RBA's global data. Stop thinking about sites. It makes it a lot easier. It also does another cool feature called, we call it the show me, but it's show me what's relevant, right? So today, if you've gone into the Configuration Manager 2007 console and you've done a bunch of custom, you know, roles or configurations, you're going to see all this extra noise in the console or all the extra nodes. We actually remove everything that's not applicable to you. So if I make Wally, and I'll show you this in a demo in a moment, if I make Wally the app administrator, he's not going to really see anything about the hierarchy. He's just going to be focused on, here's the applications I need to create, and you know, maybe the collections he's going to go target. So we've removed all that clutter from the console. Security roles, what types of roles can I see and what can I do with them? 14 different ones in the box. We give you the ability to go and customize all those roles. We've made it real easy. There's a UI that'll be in there that makes it easy to just select and turn on things on and off. You can add a role to one or many roles to the same person. So Wally can be not only the app admin, he can also be the OSD admin, and maybe I'm just the OSD admin. So you don't have to create new and different roles if someone's got a superset. You can go and add different roles. We have a concept called security scopes that are the ways that we control the objects. So we have the roles, which are the types of actions that you can do. So again, Wally, he's going to be my app administrator, so he's responsible for creating apps. But then we have a security scope, is the control on the objects. So I might say, you know what, Wally can go and create, and everything he creates goes into the finance scope. Likewise, anybody else that creates in the finance scope, Wally can go and manage. If I go and create something in the events scope, Wally won't have any access to that, or he won't see it, even though he's an app administrator. So it's a way to control the different objects. That's how you can do the things like server and client, or maybe, you know, manufacturing and office, where you can say, Wally's going to take control of all the clients, I'll take all the servers. We're both app admins, but we only see the apps that are relevant to our scopes. And then collections. Collections are kind of scopes within themselves. We can go in, delegate collections to different people, and that's what we can use for the different targeting types of things. So the roles are the types of actions that I can do, the scopes are the type of objects that I can interact with, and collections are obviously the collections that I go and interact with. Okay, data segmentation in the past. Meg wants to go distribute a package to all of her EMEA users in the West region. We have Luis, who's a French admin in the French collection, so he has to go on to the French primary site to do all of his stuff. And then we have Anthony, who can do everything at his site. Well, Meg can sit at the central and do everything, but if we wanted to regulate Luis or Anthony, we had to have them do it at the primary site. So again, we put in two different sites here, potentially, to control what Anthony and Louis can do. So that was what we had to do in 2007. As we look at it in 2012, if Meg wants to go in and, you know, distribute an application to all our EMEA users, she can just go to the central administration site and do everything there with the different roles and scopes that are put in place. So we can go and create and distribute an application, and then the same thing would happen for Louis. He can go and create new collections limited to French. He can also go and create deployments for those collections. And then the same thing for Anthony at the central administration site. He'd do the exact same thing with his limited scopes. So again, we put scopes onto people to limit the types of objects. So, you know, all the, you know, English collections would be, you know, in the English scope. And then we use the roles to control the type of objects they can interact with, allowing us to use one central administration site and not put those primary sites in place. So again, if you're doing a rollout or your configurement environment is under 100,000, there's probably not a reason to go to a central administration site. And one reason that people were looking at was, hey, what if I need to grow? Well, when Configuration Manager 2012 SP1 comes, we're going to allow you to attach it to a CAS, so you don't even have to, what we call, future-proof your environment. So you can kind of plan for what you need to do today, and then you can kind of grow into that hierarchy that you'll need. Okay, so I talked a little bit about collections. We've done some changes with collections. Today we had, you know, collections and sub-collections, and, you know, you can go secure them in different ways. We've actually changed the way we do collections, and we do what we call collection limiting. So a sub-collection that you had in the past might have members in the parent collection or might not. Now when we do our new collections, all the collections are built off of other collections. So if Meg's the highest level admin, she would go and have access to all systems. And if she wants to go and give Louis access to just French systems, she would go and build a limited collection based off of all systems that scope to French systems. So maybe all the French systems have FR as the beginning characters of the computers, and we can go and actually write a custom query on that and then do that collection off that. Likewise, once I get all those French systems, maybe, you know, FRD for desktop, and then I can go and write another query on those collection rules and filter out more. So as you look, it's all systems is the, you know, the parent collection, and then we've scoped down further to French systems, and then we scoped down further to French desktops. So each one builds off the previous collection. There. Okay, so as we do this, Louis can read the French systems and all the collections limited to French. So I would go ahead, and when I'm doing the collection limiting, Meg creates it all. She has all systems. She creates French systems. She gives Louis permission to see all the French systems. He won't be able to see the English systems because he doesn't have rights to it, although Meg does because she has rights to all systems and English. And then he'd be able to see French systems and everything below it. Additionally, if we want, we could we can set modify and delete on the French desktop. What's that? Hold on. Sorry, I lost my place here. So you wouldn't be able to see English systems, then he can go and modify and delete the French desktops, but he's actually restricted at the French systems level. So since Meg actually is the authoritative owner of that, and she's the one with the control on it to modify the query, he won't be able to change anything on that level. So just to back up, since I kind of lost my place there, as I go and I create these collections and Meg's the full admin, she would go and she'd have the all systems and she'd create French systems, and she'd probably be the one with modify access. She's going to give read access to Luis to go and see French systems. From that point on, he could have modified everything below it. So for French desktops, he's actually got modify permissions there. So he might be able to go and change the query, modify the query, or he can go ahead and actually add a different collection underneath French systems for other things he wants to manage. So maybe he's going to get more granular with some of these collections. But since he's read-only at the French systems level, he won't be able to go and modify the query that's assigned to him and give himself more rights or anything like that. Likewise, he won't be able to see the peer collection of English systems, which is going to be for Anthony. Okay. So again, every collection is limited by another collection. Assigning a collection to an administrator automatically assigns them everything below it. So when we had the French systems and then we had French desktops, if I assign you French systems, you're going to see everything below it. Kind of think of it as a file system folder structure, and you kind of get everything below it. I think you can regulate that too. And we only ship two read-only collections at the root. You'll see a few collections shipped out of the box, but only two of them are read-only, all systems and all users and user groups. There's other things like, I believe it's all desktops and servers and unknown computers. Those aren't actually read-only collections. They're just built-in collections to help you out of the box with things. So the two root collections that can't be deleted are the read-only, all systems, and all user groups. And remember, everything that goes into Configuration Manager will go into these. So every time a client comes in, it'll be in all systems. Every time a user's discovered, it'll be in all users. So you can't delete them, and everything goes in there. So it's best to not allow people access to these unless they actually have a need to use them or view them. Okay, with that said, I'm going to show you a demo of role-based administration. Okay. So if you see here, we're in our administration node. Then we have a security folder here. When we go in here, we can actually see all the administrative users that we've added or discovered. So here we have three of them. We have desktop admin, server admin, and administrator. And we can actually see the different types of roles added to them. So a full administrator is obviously our full administrator. We want to make sure that he has access to everything. And then we have two application administrators, one for desktop and one for server.
They liked what you said next door. They were clapping.
Oh, nice. That's awesome. If you go to the properties of the user, we can actually see the types of roles. So since I had already configured these for you, you can see the security roles. Again, I just have one role assigned to this admin, which is application administrator. You can go and add multiple roles to an admin. So again, Wally can be the app administrator and the OSD admin, and I can just be the OSD admin. So we have the flexibility, again, to do a superset of the roles. And then here you can see those scopes that I assigned to you. So I might allow you access to marketing machines and finance machines, or I might just say you're only in charge of the call center. So you can do those types of scopes on those things. And the scope can be collections, or the scope can be things like the security scope on an object. Furthermore, we have a more advanced thing that you can go and basically do an advanced association of the collection to do the all up to the actual role that's there. So you can actually go and say, security scope, the security role. So I didn't have two here. My apologies. I kind of messed that part of the demo up. If I had multiple roles assigned, I could actually limit Wally as the OSD admin only to finance, and Wally as the app admin to finance and marketing. So we allow you to do the granular thing, or you can just say all of his roles get all the security scopes. So we give you the granularity to say, I'm going to really constrain both roles if you're a dual admin, or you can say, you're a dual admin across multiple roles, and you get all the scopes entitled to it. So you give a lot of that flexibility there. Okay, so I'm going to actually open another console here, and I should probably go over to the primary. I think that's what Wally recommends I do. Okay. And I'm going to run as the desktop admin so you can kind of see what he has today. If you go into the software library, you can just see he's actually just regulated application management. So he can only see, you know, the apps and the packages. You don't actually see anything like the OSD objects or the software updates. So his role has actually been limited to the types of things that he can see. You do see monitoring and asset and compliance because he's able to actually deploy. Likewise, he's able to distribute content, so you'll be able to see the distribution points in the administration node. So if you go back to our other console over here, I go ahead and I could actually go and add a security role of like full administrator. And then I should be able to refresh. Or do I have to close the console?
Shouldn't have to close the console. Oh, no, should just have to refresh.
I'll just close and reopen to make it easier. And then just like that, you can see I've have all my other objects added to me. So again, it's a great way to prevent putting primary sites in place. It's a lot easier to do all your security security segregation or segregation of roles. And it just makes life a lot easier when you're managing a lot of administrators across your enterprise working in different environments.
Okay, we got 3.5 minutes to go before you guys can head off to your next session. So we've just got a couple of slides left to talk about, and it's things coming in Service Pack 1. So John was talking about the hierarchy and what we're doing in the hierarchy and when you need a CAS and when you need multiple primaries, and I was talking about the SQL replication stuff. So a couple of things we're doing in SQL Server to help you in your environments with Service Pack 1. The first thing is we're allowing you to enable SQL compression. What SQL compression will allow you to do is when you're actually doing the replication, you can see the highlighted box there, you can turn on compression of the SQL Server links. So as we're replicating this data between our sites, we can have it compressed to save the network bandwidth utilization, to make it better for slower links. We're thinking that we'll probably turn this on by default. We're not quite sure yet, but our initial testing has shown that even though there is a CPU impact, it's negligible compared to the benefits we're getting out of the network traffic savings for this. But even if we turn it on, you'll be able to turn it off if you want to. This will be on a per site link basis. So any replication link between two different sites for the SQL stuff, you will turn on compression if you want to go ahead and do that. Also, you can see down at the bottom, replication detention days. That's the number of days we'll keep replication data in case two sites are out of contact for that period of time. The default is 5 days. If my site's down for 3 days, then we can just do SQL replication and configure things just through our retention data. If it's down for more than 5 days, then we have to do a full reinitialization of the entire database. So you'll be able to customize that as well. The next thing we're doing to help you control is on your SQL views. So those are the top two checkboxes. Today, all of your client data, your hardware inventory, your software metering data, gets replicated from your primary site up to the CAS. The CAS always has the data. But maybe you don't want that to happen. Maybe you have a slower link and you want to reduce the amount of traffic going across. So you can go ahead and say, I don't want hardware inventory to flow up from my site in Amsterdam up to my CAS in New York City. Then if the admin at New York City, John, wants to run a report that requires hardware inventory information from Amsterdam, will query using SQL distributed views across the link to Amsterdam in real time, gather the data we need, bring it across that John can go ahead and render his report, including the data that came from Seattle that was replicated up, and then the distributed view data through SQL Server for the Amsterdam data. So again, giving you more flexibility on what data gets replicated up to your environments. And then, as John just mentioned, hierarchy expansion. Today, you can't add a standalone primary site to a hierarchy. Once you install it as a standalone primary, you're stuck. So what we're allowing you to do in the Service Pack 1 release is to take that standalone primary site, upgrade it to Service Pack 1, install a brand new central administration site, attach this primary site to that brand new central administration site, and now go ahead and install a brand new primary site, and then you'll have a full hierarchy with global data replication and site data replication as appropriate. You can only add one existing primary to a brand new CAS. So it's for a standalone primary to a brand new hierarchy, then you can add new primaries. You can't take two standalone primaries and attach them to the same CAS. So for that scenario, oops, we don't have the slide in here. Mark showed it yesterday. We give you the scenario of doing a migration from your second standalone primary over to your hierarchy. So a ConfigMan 2012 migration to ConfigMan 2012 to get that merger acquisition scenario in place. Okay, we're out of time, so I won't cover this, but here's just some quick little details on ways to reduce delivering on the promise of reducing infrastructure between ConfigMan 2007, when you need, where you would implement multiple primary sites and secondary sites and why, and then a ConfigMan 2012, how we're reducing some of those requirements for you. So you have this for reference material. Minimum system requirements, you guys have seen this before. Basically everything 64-bit, with the exception of distribution points, we support 32-bit. Admin consoles, 32-bit, as well as clients we still support in 32-bit. But other than that, everything is now all 64-bit, so plan for that. And if you went to our session yesterday, you saw this slide and I talked about it in the overview as far as preparing for ConfigMan 2012. Flatten your hierarchy, go to 64-bit, everything, Windows Server 2008, SQL 2008, 64-bit, and looking at branch cache, as John was talking about earlier, to help reduce some of those branch location scenarios. And then move to SQL reporting services today, because that's how you do reporting in ConfigMan 2012, is all through SRS. With that, you can go to there's blogs. John does a bunch of blogging up there. We have a bunch of how-to videos up on the TechNet site. There's virtual labs available on the TechNet site. There's some old VHDs you can download, beta 2 VHDs, not any on RTM. And if you do tweeting, there's a hashtag there for tweeting. I don't tweet or blog, but John does a lot of that stuff. So you can follow him on his appropriate resources. We have some additional sites or additional sessions this week that you can go ahead and attend. We've done the overview. We've done the endpoint protection session. We have John and I are doing a migration session tomorrow morning, same time. And then tomorrow afternoon, Hassan and AJ are doing the application management session. And then Mark and I are doing a patch and settings management session late Friday. And John and Craig are doing the client management scenarios in the Windows 8 timeframe session Friday morning as well. So a lot more content available for you. If you want to play around with role-based administration or installing a hierarchy, we have hands-on labs down in the hands-on lab room. You go play around with those. Outside of that, thank you all for attending. Please take a moment at some time today, fill out your evaluations, and have a great rest of your week here.